Join us at The Hedge for a conversation about engineering, technology, and business. In this episode, Ron Bonica and Russ White dig into segment routing mapped.
Well, hello, Ron. It's just you and I on The Hedge tonight. I tried desperately to get a co-host, but nobody likes me. No, I don't know why. Everybody was busy tonight, which is cool. So,
By the way, just to key in on us, nobody likes you. You and I have been friends for 15, 20 years now.
Yep, something like that.
That's yeah, because right. It's coming up on that long.
Yeah, I've known you from the ITF for all these years and years and years, back when I was at Cisco and all this other stuff. So let's just start with SR. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know what segment routing is. A lot of mm-hmm. people know what segment routing V6 is. But what they may not understand is why is there this move afoot to do something beyond segment routing? Because I always say that segment routing is kind of to me the way that MPLS-TE should have been done in the first place. So why the move to move beyond segment routing, SRv6 specifically?
Okay, let's talk about this a little bit. First, let's talk about what segment routing is. Then let's talk about its two implementations, the MPLS implementation and the IPv6 implementation. And then let's talk about the two variations of the IPv6 implementation.
Okay.
SRv6, and you called it SRv6 plus. The IETF has asked that we rename it to SRm6, SR mapped 6.
Okay.
So, new name, we might flip back and forth from SRm6 to SRv6 plus because, you know, we do that sort of thing. So, anyhow, let's go back and ask the first question. What's segment routing? Segment routing starts out as being a traffic engineering mechanism. Normally, you have packets. They're going to take the least cost path from source to destination. You'd like them to take another path for some reason. You'd like them to route around congestion. You'd like them to avoid low bandwidth links. For some policy, you want to go a path other than the least cost.
Yeah, so you want to separate elephant from mouse flows, or you want to, I don't know, there's lots of different reasons, right?
But yeah, there are a million reasons you might want a traffic engineer.
Right.
It's just that you want it to take a path other than the least cost. The minute you've come up with traffic engineered tunnels, the next thing that comes down the pike is fast reroute. Let's say for a minute you have a traffic engineered tunnel, and it's really long, like it covers 3,000 circuit miles from New York to Los Angeles. And let's say for a minute that it takes a failure in Nevada, 2,500 miles into the path.
Yep.
You don't want to have to signal all the way back to the head end and let it start sending again, because that's going to mean a lot of packet loss between the time the failure is detected and things reconverge. The minute you have a traffic engineering solution, you're going to want a fast reroute solution to go with it. So those are the first two applications of segment routing. Then more applications start to grow with it. Some of them started to emerge back in the days when segment routing was just an MPLS thing, and others started to emerge along with the IPv6 implementation. One of them is service function chaining. Maybe what you would like to do is associate an instruction with each waypoint in a traffic engineered chain.
So to give an example that's familiar perhaps to people who work in data centers, I have a host that has been owned by mm-hmm. some attacker, and I want to, or maybe not, maybe I don't even know what's going on with the host. It's just sending weird traffic patterns that I don't recognize. Like it's doing something I don't expect it to do. So what I want to do is I want to be able to steer that traffic to an IDS system that it normally doesn't go through, because I want to be able to, do some extra work on that traffic. I want to look at it a little bit and see what might happen to be going on. So that's perhaps a good instance of a traffic engineering or a service chain that people might recognize.
Yeah, and in fact, it's just another application of traffic engineering. Sometimes you traffic engineer a path because you want to route around congestion, or you want to route around your low bandwidth links. Sometimes you traffic engineer a path because you want to route through a service function instance. You want to route through that IDS or that firewall or whatever it is that you want to have a shot at the packet. We'll talk about the evolution of service function chaining in segment routing in a minute. One of the things you might want to do is just send a packet to the service function instance so it gets a shot at the packet. Another thing you might want to do is send an instruction along with the packet. You know, the instruction might be subject this packet to this firewall policy, or, you know, take a look at this packet, but whatever you do, don't forward it. I guess that's just another firewall policy. So that's another application of segment routing. Then there's a final application of segment routing that doesn't show up so much in the MPLS version of segment routing, but it does show up in the IP versions, and that's VPNs. If you think about the way a VPN is implemented over SRMPLS, over the segment routing version of MPLS, what you'll see in the packet is a payload. The payload is encapsulated by an MPLS service label, you know, something that's allocated by the egress PE and signaled by IBGP. And then you'll see an SR label stack. That's VPNs in SRMPLS. In at least one version of the IPv6, well, actually in both versions of the IPv6 segment routing, you'll see that MPLS label encoded a different way, encoded as something other than an MPLS label. And we'll talk about that later as we go on to this. So anyhow, we've talked about the segment routing use cases. The most obvious use case, traffic engineering. Along with traffic engineering comes fast reroute. Then there are the auxiliary use cases, service function chaining, and VPNs. So we come up with four use cases: traffic engineering, fast reroute, service function chaining, VPNs. Now, next thing we want to talk about is the implementations of segment routing. Well, there's the one that we all know and love because it's been around the longest and it's, you know, the most widely deployed and the most mature. That's SRMPLS. In segment routing, we have a thing called an SR path. It provides unidirectional connectivity from an ingress node to an egress node, and it contains segments. Now, what exactly is a segment? Instinctively, you might want to say that a segment is a segment of the topology. You know, if you think about your path to work, you have a segment that goes through your subdivision, a segment that goes through the interstate, and a segment that goes through the industrial park where you work. Well, in segment routing, a segment is not a segment of the topology. A segment is an instruction that is instantiated on the ingress node of a segment of your topology. If you think about a segment, a path from New York to Los Angeles, it might have a segment that starts with an instruction on a node in New York, another segment that starts with an instruction on a node in St. Louis, and another segment that starts on a node in Las Vegas. And the segments start with instructions. Now, in SRMPLS, the instruction is represented by an MPLS label. There are many kinds of segments. I'm going to talk about three in particular that are common. One is an adjacency segment. It pushes you through exactly one link, and it's a specified link. There is a prefix segment. A prefix brings you to the least cost path to that prefix. Actually, a prefix segment is generally a segment that terminates in a /32, so it's really a node segment. And then there's another kind of segment called a binding segment. A binding segment is actually a shorthand for another path. So it's popped off by one node and replaced by multiple labels that represent multiple segments. So where have we gone with this? In SRMPLS, a path contains many segments, and the ingress node pushes one label for each segment that belongs to the path. It forwards the path to the next segment in ingress node. It pops a label and forwards it on. The next one pops a label and forwards it on. Finally, the packet arrives unencapsulated at the destination. Have I made that clear as mud?
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. Yeah, okay. I think people will get that, sure.
Okay, so we've talked about SRMPLS. In SRMPLS, the path is represented by an MPLS label stack. The nice thing about this is no router in the path maintains per path information. The only thing a router maintains is information regarding the segments that it participates in. So we talked about that router in St. Louis. It has no idea that the path from New York to Los Angeles passes through it. All it knows is that it participates in a segment that ends in St. Louis. We've talked about this. Now the next thing we have to talk about is the IPv6 flavors of segment routing. Well, the first question is, why would you want an IPv6 flavor of segment routing? Why not use that MPLS flavor?
Well, one reason would be, so I have a box that doesn't support MPLS in my data center fabric or in my core, wherever I happen to be running it. Another reason would be that I have a situation where I want to be able to track the traffic, and MPLS doesn't allow me to see the entire traffic path through the network because you are doing a label swap at each point.
Well, a POP, even worse. The reason can't see it is the initial segment identifiers are gone by the time they reach the intermediate nodes.
That's right. Whereas with SRv6, the label stack, the pointer just changes in the v6 packet, so I can actually see where the packet went through the network.
This is really cool. I asked a question, and I got you to answer it. So we swapped roles. You've hit on one very valid reason to go to an IPv6 encapsulation. Let's say for a minute you've got one transit node in your network that's not MPLS enabled. Well, you really could tunnel your MPLS over UDP for that transit node. It's called SRMPLS over UDP. And right. You could still use SRMPLS. But let's say for a minute that 75% of the nodes in your data center are not MPLS enabled. And, some of them are segment endpoints. Well, in this case, you've got a really good motivation for going to an IPv6 flavor of segment routing. Some people might say to you, let's say for a minute I'm a carrier and I have an IPv6 only backbone. Now all my backbone devices are perfectly capable of forwarding MPLS packets. My problem is I don't have IPv4 enabled. Well, some people might say to you, well, if that's your situation, you need an IPv6 flavor of MPLS. That's utter nonsense. SRMPLS runs over IPv6 backbones just fine. If you think about it, you need to have MPLS forwarding enabled on every network link. The only IGP you need is, you need an IGP. So if you're running ISIS, it runs just fine over IPv6 only backbones. Same for OSPF-V3, runs just fine over IPv6 only backbones. Same for BGP, it runs just fine over IPv6 only backbones. So if your problem is you don't want to enable IPv4, you can still run SRMPLS. But you bring up the valid use case. What if I've got lots and lots of devices that are not MPLS enabled? And what's more, what if I want to make them segment endpoint? In this case, you need an IPv6 flavor segment routing. Now, there are two IPv6 flavors of segment routing. One of them is called SRv6. The other used to be called SRv6 plus, but it's now called SRMPLS. So we're going to refer to them as SRv6 and SRMPLS. The first thing I'm going to do is give a brief overview of SRv6. The first thing SRv6 does is changes the semantic of an IPv6 address. An IPv6 address now contains two parts. The high order bits are a locator. They're advertised into the IGP, and they tell you where an instruction is instantiated. The low order bits are an instruction. They tell you to do something, to forward a packet through a specific adjacency, to forward a packet to the least cost path, to the next address in the path, or maybe to do something else. So this is a big difference. In standard IPv6, an address represents an interface. If you see address dead beef, you can point to an interface in your network and say, that's dead beef. In SRv6, An address is an instruction instantiated on a node. Now, let's say for a minute, a packet passes through a node that is not a segment endpoint or a node that's not SRv6 enabled. Well, it doesn't know the difference. It treats the address as a prefix that it forwards to, and it just forwards. When the prefix reaches the address that's identified by the locator, by the high order bits of the address,
right,
then it takes a look at the low order bits, and the low order bits tell it what to do with the packet. And there are many, many different instructions those low order bits can identify. Now, before we go to those instructions, let's talk about how traffic engineering works in IPv6. IPv6 has this concept of a routing header. Well, it has this concept of extension headers. An extension header is something that you can put after an IPv6 header and before the payload. And the extension header is a way to extend IPv6 to give it functionality that it didn't have before. Well, since the beginning, IPv6 had this concept of a routing header. A routing header has, every routing header has four fields that are absolutely required. An identifier for the next header, the header length, the routing header type, and a field called segments left. And then after segments left is a segment list. The segment list, in the old days before SRv6, was a list of IPv6 addresses. And segments left told you how many segments still needed to be visited. What would happen is an IPv6 node would get a packet, it would look at the destination address, see the destination address was local to it. In SRv6, it looks at it and says, oh, the higher order bits are my locator. Then it goes to process the next header. It sees that the next header is a routing header. And in fact, in SRv6, it's a specific kind of routing header called the segment routing header. It takes a look at segments left. If segments left is zero, you don't have to, you shouldn't have to process the routing header. In SRv6, you actually do have to look at it for other things. But in normal IPv6, if segments left is equal to zero, you should go on to the next header. If segments left is greater than zero, you find the member of the segment list that is referenced by segments left. You copy it to the IPv6 destination address. You decrement TTL. Well, in IPv6, it's called hop count, and you forward the packet. So this routing header is what gives IPv6 traffic engineering. Now, routing headers have been around forever. The current version of the IPv6 standard is RFC 8200. It obsoletes 2460, which has been around for a good 15 years, and 2460 had a routing header. SRv6 defined a type of routing header called the SRH. The SRH has the segments left. It has a segments list, which is a list of segment identifiers. You know, these segment identifiers are the SRv6 address type, and they're what's going to get copied into the address and forwarded on to the next segment identifier. The interesting thing is the instruction, when a packet comes in SRv6, the instruction tells the router how to process the segment routing header it's about to see next. The instruction in the destination address tells the router that's processing the SRH what it should do when it sees the next SRH.
So explain that a little bit, because people might not understand what you mean by tells the router what to do in that case.
Let's talk about two different kinds of instructions. One of them is called a NDT4. This NDT4 instruction is only legal at the very last element of an SR path. It's only legal at the SR egress node. What it says is de-encapsulate this packet, throw away the IPv6 header, throw away the SRH. If you see IPv4 payload, forward it using the table that's provided as a parameter in this instruction.
So that table would be like a VERF, let's say.
Yes, like exactly.
That. Right.
This kind of instruction is only valid if segments left equals zero. If segments left equals one, it is not valid. You have to discard the packet. When you get the packet, you look at the destination address, look at the type of instruction, and that will give you an idea how to process the routing header. Now, another type of instruction is called the end instruction. End just means forward the... End means When you go to the segment routing header, pick up the next instruction, copy it to the destination address of the IP header, and forward it along the least cost path to that address. So the instruction in the destination address conditions the segment routing header. It determines what the processing node is going to do with that segment routing header.
And there are other options there, like ECMP to the next hop, or don't ECMP to the next hop, or something like that. There are various types of things you can tell it to do at each hop.
You've noticed an interesting thing. Because an instruction is encoded in the IPv6 address, remember we talked about a couple use cases for segment routing? One of them was traffic engineering, and we saw an instruction that was useful for traffic engineering, the end instruction. Another was VPNs, and we saw an instruction that was useful for that. It's called the NDT4. Well, there's a draft called the, bungle the name. It's draft IETF Spring SRv6 Network Programming. And it defines, I'm going to guess about 18 instructions. Some of them are for traffic engineering. Some of them are for VPNs. None of them are really for service function chaining. But what you'll see is that they're all encoded in the low order bits of the destination address and cached in the routing header. The SRv6 routing header is unlike other routing headers in that it doesn't just have the four mandatory fields in a segment list. It has flags, tags, and TLVs. Flags are being defined as we go. I know of two of them now. No, I know of one of them now, an OAM flag. Tags, we know are there. We know that they'll be used in the future when the IPv6 address doesn't have enough room in it to hold all the parameters that the instruction needs. So you put them in the tags. And right. Sometimes, if they don't even fit in the tags, which are fixed length, you have these TLVs at the end of the routing header. What we're finding in SRv6 is that the route, everything is encoded in either the IPv6 address or the routing header. IPv6 defines, let me count them on my hands, hop by hop, destination, routing, fragment, AHESP, and you can have another destination. So you can have, there are eight different extension headers in IPv6. The tendency in SRv6 is to do everything with one extension header, the routing header. For instance, the one TLV that's defined is called an HMAC. It's for authenticating a routing header. You've got an authentication header in IPv6. They don't use it because it won't work because of the way the routing header works. What you're finding is the proponents of SRv6 are trying very hard to do everything with encoding everything in exactly two places, a destination address and a routing header. Let's compare that with SRm6. SRm6 tries harder to stay to IPv6 orthodoxy. Oh, there's one other thing I have to say about SRv6 along the way. Routing headers have been around for a million years, since you and I were mere children.
Yes.
Or maybe exactly. Since you and I were in our 40s, but let's tell the truth. Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But still, the internet just isn't teeming with routing headers. Well, let's ask a question, why? Well, one reason is the internet just isn't teeming with IPv6 traffic. But routing headers, as they've been defined in the past, really have a bit of a problem, and that's that they get very large very quickly. Up until very recently, routing headers tend to have the four mandatory bytes that every routing header has, followed by a segment list, with every segment being 128 bits or 16 bytes long. Well, if a path has more than a few segments, that routing header gets really, really long. A routing header with five segments in it, 5 times 16 is what? Help me out. 5 times 16 is 50 and 30 is 80.
Yes.
And then 80, the four bytes 50. Over, 88. Yeah, that's really long. It's not particularly ASIC friendly, and it eats more bandwidth than you want to eat in an internet where packets are typically pretty short in the first place.
Right. Hey, imagine a TCP ACK on a segment routed path running 88 bytes of header and 64 bytes of ACK, or not even whatever it is for an ACK. It's very, very small.
Yeah. In fact, every time I talk about this, I guess what the average size of a packet on the internet is. And one day I'm actually going to go find out what it is. But my guess is it's about 500 bytes.
It's actually, I think it's less than that.
Yeah.
I think it's more like 128 or something like that. It's bimodal, right, in the first place. So,
yeah, 88 byte overhead on a 128 byte packet is just ridiculous.
Right.
So, you know, a traditional routing header just isn't going to fly if you need more than, you know, two or three segments in the path. So let's go on to SRM6 and talk about the differences. Well, first, an SRM6, an IPv6 address is an IPv6 address. It identifies an interface, period, end of story, exactly like RFC, I want to say 4291 says. All the things that the IPv6 addressing architecture says about IPv6 addresses still apply. So there's no locator, no instruction. It identifies an interface. The next thing is SRM6 respects the fact that you can have any combination of extension headers in an IPv6 header, including the ones that it leverages. And there are three that it leverages in particular. One is the routing header. The other is the destination option header that comes at the absolute end of the packet, just before the upper layer header. And the third is a destination option header that comes before the routing header, if there is one. So let's talk about the routing header first. The routing header in SRM6 contains exactly five fields. The first four are mandatory: the type of the next header, the header length, the type that says that it's a compressed routing header. This is what SRM6 calls it, so the compressed routing header, or the CRH, and then segments left. And then there is a segment list. But the difference is the segment list in SRM6, each segment, actually there are two flavors of the CRH, a 2-byte and a 4-byte flavor. Let's talk about the 2-byte flavor. In the 2-byte flavor, every segment is encoded in a 2-byte field. So let's say for a minute you have an SR path that has 8 segments in it. That's going to be 16 bytes long, 8 times 2, plus the 4 bytes overhead. It's going to be 20 bytes long, period. When a node gets a packet, it receives the packet, it looks at the destination address. The destination address is a local interface. So it says, okay, I know it's a local interface. I don't care what kind of interface. There is no instruction in it. It's just a local interface. So I should do what IPv6 standard says to do, take a look at the next header. Let's say the next header is a CRH2. Next thing I do is look at segments left. If it's 0, I'm at the destination, skip over the CRH, and go to the next header. If it is greater than 0, you take a look at the segment that is indexed by segments left. Let's say you get the number 12. It's segment 12 encoded in a 2-byte field. You go to a special table and you look up 12, and you'll find a fib entry that's indexed by the number 12, and it will have an instruction in it. The instruction has an IPv6 address that you will copy to the destination address of the packet, an instruction that says, oh, either forward this to that address through the least cost path, or maybe forward it through this particular interface, and you forward it, period. The only thing that you encoded in the IPv6 address is a destination address. The only thing you are using the routing header for is to queue up those destination addresses, to cache those destination addresses, so you'll visit one after the other. When it comes to talking about the traffic engineering function, the only thing that we use is the destination address on the routing header. You're using the routing header for, of all things, routing. Gee.
So an interesting thing here is that SR basically transfers state out of the control plane, in some sense, to the data plane, into the packet header. What this is doing is it's transferring not all of that state back, but some of that state back to the control plane, because that table has to come from someplace, right? Where does that table...
That's a really insightful question. And the question is, which state has to be in the packet, and which state are you going to truck around in the control plane? Path state is always in the packet. Whether you're SRv6 or SRm6, remember that router in St. Louis that was in the middle of the path from New York to LA? It doesn't know if it's in the middle of that path. All it knows about is the segment in which it participates. Is there any path state in SRv6? No. That's why you don't need RSVP or LDP to move the path state around. Is there any path state in SRm6? No. You still don't need RSVP or LDP to move path state around. Is there segment state in an SRv6? Absolutely. That's why you need SRv6 extensions to ISIS and OSPF to move segment state through the network.
Right.
Same for SRm6. You're moving segment state through the network. Bottom line is, per path state should always be in the packet. Per segment state, you can put it in the packet or you can put it in the network, but if it makes the packet too long...
Yeah, this is just a straight trade-off between where the most state makes sense. Like, how often are you carrying that state? What impact does that state have on the forwarding process versus the control plane process, things like that?
So. Exactly. Path state in the packet, segment state, you've got a choice. Put as much as you need to in the control plane to keep the packet short. All we've talked about in SRm6 so far is traffic engineering. We haven't talked about VPNs yet. One of the nice things about SRm6 is it decouples its VPN facility, its traffic engineering facility. So let's say you're running eVPN and you want to use SRm6 as the underlay to route your packets from ingress to egress, from ingress PE to egress PE, but you really want to use the VNNI to encapsulate your packets, you can if you want to. If you don't want to, you have an alternative. The alternative is there's something called the destination option header. It's the last header in the extension header chain. So if you have a routing header, it's going to come way after the routing header. The destination option header can carry many options. We've defined it a new option called the per path service instruction. The per path service instruction is a 32-bit entity. It carries the exact same information that an MPLS service label would carry in L3 VPN, or a VNI would carry in eVPN. It's a number that's allocated by the egress PE, advertised by IBGP, encoded by the ingress PE. There's very little inventiveness there. All we've done is move a field out of a service encapsulation, either the VNI or the VNI or the MPLS service label, and moved into a destination option. Now, what is the benefit of putting it in a destination option as opposed to encoding it in an IPv6 address? Well, one benefit is, let's say you're running a VPN service and you really want all your traffic taking the least cost path, you don't need a routing header because the routing header is for routing your packet along a path other than the least cost. All you need is this little destination option and you're ready to go. Another thing is you can protect that destination option with an IPv6 authentication option or an IPv6 ESP option. So the rest of the IPv6 architecture still works for you. Now the next thing we need to talk about is service function chaining. In some cases, all you need to do is route your packet through the service function instance. Now there's a bit of wishful thinking here for both SRv6 and SRv6 Plus. Let's say your service function instance is a firewall. Your firewall needs to know enough to look beyond the encapsulating IPv6 header and all its extension headers to look at the payload, which is what it's actually firewalling. But let's assume for a minute that you've got that problem licked, that your firewall is clever enough to do that, or you've got some kind of service function forwarder to rip off the encapsulation and re-encapsulate when the SFI is finished doing its job. Okay, sometimes all you need to do is run the packet through the SFI. Sometimes you need to give the SFI some kind of instruction. Well, an SRv6, that instruction can be encoded in the IPv6 destination address. In SRm6, instead of using the destination address, we have another destination option. That option is encoded before the routing header, and it's processed by every segment endpoint. So we're giving it the same bit of information, it's just we're encoding it differently. We're putting it in an extension header that is meant for that purpose, as opposed to putting it in an IPv6 address. and hoping that it doesn't influence anything else. I talked about fast reroute and then never came back to it. What do we do if we encounter a break midway through a packet, midway through a path?
You have to signal the head end and ask the head end to re. So you either have to allow the packet to go or the failure to be signaled to the tail end of the tunnel, and then have the tail end signal the head end, or you've got to figure out some way to allow the device in the middle to signal back to the head end.
Okay, that's head end restoration. Signal right. back to the head end, make it do something different. Now, the problem with head end restoration is it can take a very long time. Let's take a look at our path between New York and LA, and let's say that the break is in Las Vegas. I'm going to take a guess, which is probably wrong, but I'm going to guess Las Vegas is 2,000 miles west of New York. Good guess?
Could be. Who knows?
Okay. That's an idea, yeah. So what we need to do is get a packet from Las Vegas to New York before New York can even think about doing anything about fixing the problem. Photons travel through fiber at about 100 miles per millisecond. That means it's going to be, check my math, 20 milliseconds before New York even knows that there's been a break. Assuming New York can fix the problem instantaneously, which we know it can't because there's no such thing as instantaneous, but let's say it could, it takes another 20 milliseconds to get the next packet there. Las Vegas is going to experience at least a 40 millisecond outage.
Right.
Excuse me. And you want to do better than that. What you want to do is something like RLFA. RLFA is a strategy where you're assuming that your network has built a topology that can be broken down into rings. The node just upstream of the link, well, when it's building its routing protocol, building its routing tables, it determines the least cost path to its destination. And it also finds a node that is reachable without going through the broken link that we're going to call a repair node. If it could build a tunnel to that repair node and put traffic in that tunnel to get it to the repair node could de-encapsulate and send the packets on the rest of the way to their ultimate destination. So let's say for a moment that a packet gets all the way to Las Vegas in this path from New York to LA. Las Vegas is connected to Reno and give me another city in Nevada. I only can name two. Carson City.
Carson City. There you go.
Okay. The least cost path is through Reno. If you could build a tunnel through Carson City to, say, San Jose, that router in Las Vegas could put the traffic on that tunnel, send it through Carson City to San Jose, not traversing the broken link. San Jose de-encapsulates and forwards the packet the rest of its way to Los Angeles. Hopefully, no packets are lost at all. You don't experience that 40 millisecond or longer outage. I mentioned RLFA because that gives you the basis of how this is done. The technology in segment routing is called TILFA, Topology Independent Loop-Free Alternates. TILFA works even better than RLFA because it works no matter what the topology is. So long as a router has two interfaces, you can build a tunnel through the one that is up to a node that is a potentially functional repair node. Tunnel the traffic there and out it goes. So an SRMPLS, how does this work? You get a packet from New York. Oh, this is SRM6. In SRM6, how does this work? You get a packet out to Las Vegas. It wants to send the packet through Carson City, but that link is broken. So what does it do? It encapsulates the packet in yet another IPv6 header with yet another compressed routing header, the extension header, and it tunnels the packet out to San Jose. San Jose realizes that it's the endpoint of the outer tunnel, de-encapsulates, and sends the packet the rest of the way to Los Angeles. In SRV6, you could do the same thing. You could prepend an IPv6 header with a segment routing header and send it to the same node in San Jose. SRV6 has two modes of doing this. One is to prepend an IPv6 header with a routing header. In my mind, that method is most beneficial. The SRV6 design has another method in which you actually insert a routing header between the existing IPv6 header and the payload. That causes you to tunnel to San Jose, and then you rip the extension header out in San Jose and forward the packet. That's causing a big controversy in the IETF. And the reason why is an RFC 8200, the IPv6 spec, a source node composes a packet, puts all the extension headers in it, and sends it along the way. Intermediate nodes shouldn't insert more headers or remove headers. You know, it's not an intermediate node's job to change a packet on the way. You know, it might change a few selected fields, things like, you know, hop count and segments left and maybe DSCP, but it shouldn't be making more significant changes to a packet along the way. I've just blathered on for 48 minutes about the gruesome details of segment routing.
No, it's actually really good. So the goal behind this is primarily, just backing up the very beginning, just to give a bit of a summary, is to get some of the overhead of this large header and push some of that state back into the control plane in some way so that you're actually reducing the size of the packet on the wire, which is really where the problem is with IP SRv6, right? It's just that.
Well, certainly, yeah. When we first started doing segment routing, it was a traffic engineering solution.
Right.
Well, if you're going to have a traffic engineering solution and you're going to encode every segment in the packet, that's to say you're going to move path information out of the network and put it in the packet, you have to encode it efficiently. SRMPLS encoded path information really efficiently. Every segment was represented by a 4-byte MPLS label. SRv6, not so much. Every segment was represented by a 16-byte segment inside of a bigger header. SRm6 fixes the problem. In all fairness to the SRv6 problem, proposal, they did propose a tweak to SRv6 at the last IETF called microSIDs to try to address the problem. But in my mind, the solution is a non-starter. If you'd like, I'll describe the solution a little bit for you.
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. It starts out, every network operator asks for a /32 from his RIR. Now, that might be the first problem. Normally, your RIR wants to give you a /48. You're going to have a real good reason for getting a /32. Then it allocates from that /32 a /48 to each of its routers. Let's say you want to build a path that includes three routers. You represent that path with a single IPv6 address. The first 32 bits of it are the 32 that represent the 32 you got from your IRR. The next 16 bits are the 33rd through 48th bit that are unique to the first router. The next 16 bits are the 16 bits that are unique to the next router, and the next 16 bits are the ones that are unique to the final router. You forward the packet. It arrives at a node, and the node recognizes the first 48 bits are its, represent it. So what does it do? It right shifts bits 32 through 127 right by 16 bits in the destination address.
Yeah, I already don't like this because it's doing funny things with what I like to call magic numbers.
Yeah, and it's kind of traffic engineering by NAT.
Right.
It's a NATing algorithm. You know, it's really redefining the semantic of an IPv6 address. Now, yeah. You know, the proponents would say, you know, maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe it's not really redefining the semantic. But even if it is, the odds of your RIR giving you a /32 so that you can allocate a /48 to each router are kind of slim, because normally the RIR wants to give you a /48 for your whole network. You're going to be burning /32s pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So, okay. So I think that pretty much kind of covers it anyway, right? Is there anything else in this space that you wanted to talk about to help people understand the genesis and purpose of
SRM6?
Yeah, SRM6
we found that there was a really good motivation for IPv6. Well, first, there was a really good motivation for segment routing. Juniper's invested in this really heavily now, and we're finding lots and lots of customers with really good use cases. We're finding lots and lots of customers with really good use cases for segment routing over an IPv6 forwarding plane. Those use cases include traffic engineering. We need something with a really good traffic engineering story. To have a really good traffic engineering story, we really need that compressed routing header, because traffic engineering in IPv6 is spelled routing header. Right. And your routing header has to be ASIC friendly, because in these days, forwarding is something that's done in an ASIC. What's more, it can't consume a lot of bandwidth in a world that's full of, you know, video and audio with lots of short packets.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yep. So that all makes perfect sense.
So the SR IPv6 community just could not be ignored, and we needed a really good solution for those folks.
Yeah. Well, it all sounds great. I assume they just look up the SRM drafts. If listeners want to go in and poke at this draft series, they just look up the SRM drafts in the IETF.
Yeah, there is a overview draft, and its name, let's see if I get it right, Draft Bonica Spring SRv6 Plus. It still has the old name, even though the title has changed to SRM6.
Okay.
So Draft Bonica, actually Draft Bonica Spring Star. Okay. And that will bring you, it will have a list of references, and it'll point you to all the other SRM6 documents.
Okay, good. Excellent. And is there any place where people can keep up with you, Ron? I know you don't blog other than occasionally.
I do.
Do you? Where do you blog?
Yes. I blog on Juniper Forums. And okay. The URL, help me out if I get it wrong, is it forums.juniper.net?
That sounds correct. Thanks, Ron, for coming on The Hedge.
Well, thanks a lot. It's been fun.
Yeah, it has been. And we'll try to get you on in the future for something else.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us. You can find The Hedge at rule11.tech.